Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia on the 28th of November 2012. My name's Hereward Fenton, and I'm very, very honoured to be able to do this show today and to be able to bring you some original information as we do each week, broadcasting on the Logos Radio Network across a number of FM stations in the United States and, of course, beaming out around the world and with a special focus on our Australian listeners. And our show does focus to a large extent on Australian news, but all the news that we bring to you is of extreme relevance regardless of where you are. Of course, we live in a very globally networked planet, and most of the conditions and factors that affect people in Australia affect people around the world, especially the ones we focus on, because we're not particularly interested in the minutiae or the gossip that goes with individual domestic issues. And we do occasionally touch on them, but we are far more interested in this show on the way in which local, regional affairs affect and are affected by things that are going on around the world. And today's show is no exception to that, because I'm going to be talking in the first hour to Don Meisch, an expert in the area of electromagnetic radiation. And he will be coming on shortly. We're just waiting for the call. And he'll be actually talking to us about his research into the health effects of smart meters. And that is actually going to be a really original and important addition to the sum of knowledge we have on this subject. So do stand by for that interview coming up very, very shortly. In the second hour, I've got an hour-long discussion with Josh Jackson, a regular on the show, in which we plough through a number of topics related to questions of technology. And we're looking at some sort of emerging technologies and the way in which governments and power structures use those technologies. And the kind of the focus of my discussion there is really to look at the way in which technology always has two sides. There's always a positive and a negative that comes with any advancement in technology. And that, I believe, goes back to the dawn of civilization, you know, to the, even before that, you know, to the time when our upright, you know, hominid ancestors first grabbed a stone and began to do something with it. There's always been a plus and a minus associated with it. So really interesting the discussion there coming up in the second hour. So do stay with us for that. And, of course, if you'd like to join the discussion, you're more than welcome. As Truth News Radio Australia does have a call-in line, and you are able to call us, if you're in Australia, on this number, 1-300-153-372, and that is a local call cost call for anyone calling within Australia. If you're calling us from the United States, we have another number, and it is 512-646-1984. So I do look forward to hearing from you. And please do check out our website if you get a chance on truthnews.com.au, and you can subscribe to our podcasts and get all of our latest information and articles. So we're still just actually waiting for that call to come through from Don Meisch. But while we do that, I thought I might just have a look at what is going on at present in Australia. Now, I did just say a moment ago that we don't focus on the minutiae of scandals, but the one that is going on at the moment in Australia is pretty huge, ladies and gentlemen, and it could and should bring down the government. I'll bring to you an article here from the ABC, ABC News: the opposition ramps up attacks on Gillard. Julia Gillard, of course, is the Prime Minister of Australia. The federal opposition has dramatically escalated its attack on Prime Minister Julia Gillard, saying new details of the slush fund affair suggest she has broken the law and should resign. And I'll read to you the key points on the story from the ABC. Julia Gillard helped establish the Australian Workers' Union Workplace Reform Association while working as a lawyer for Slater and Gordon in the early 1990s. The Prime Minister says that she believed the association would be used for legitimate purposes, but it was later used as a union slush fund by her then boyfriend, AWU official Bruce Wilson. Newly released transcripts from Slater and Gordon show Ms. Gillard wrote to the West Australian Corporate Affairs Commission to argue for the association's incorporation in Western Australia, rejecting concerns that it was ineligible because it might be a trade union. Asked in Parliament on Monday whether she had written to the West Australian Commissioner for Corporate Affairs to vouch for the association's legitimacy, Ms. Gillard replied, "The claim has been made, but no correspondence has ever been produced." So they've caught her out in a little furphy there. Of course, it may just be that she's forgotten, as people do, especially people in high office. But of course, that's a little bit of a sidetrack from the main issue here, and I'll try and just break it down to you in simple, plain English. Julia Gillard was involved in setting up this slush fund, and the funds were used for purposes nothing to do with the union. They were used to actually fund private renovations made on houses and various other completely unauthorized activities, mainly under the auspices of AWU official Bruce Wilson. Now, she doesn't deny that, but she denies any knowledge of that. However, her denials ring rather hollow in the light of the fact that she quite clearly appears to have set up this account to set up the association on the sly while she was working at Slater and Gordon. She didn't open an official brief for the account with her company, so her company had no knowledge of it, Slater and Gordon being a major law firm. And it was all done as a kind of a moonlighting job, and it was a vehicle for criminal activities. A pretty serious breach of the law, folks, and she got away with it, and she's continued to get away with it. I mean, this story broke in the news in a major way probably about 6 months ago, and yet despite that, there have been very little repercussions for Julia Gillard, but she's being caught now in an ongoing series of lies, probably little attempts to cover up the truth. And I think sooner or later that this will bring her down. And that would be a good thing. Of course, I don't hold any great hopes that the replacement of Julia Gillard, whether it be another Labor leader or a switch to a Liberal Conservative Party government would be a better thing. And of course, for our American listeners, when I say Liberal, the name of our Conservative Party here is the Liberal Party. So when we refer to the Liberal Party in Australia, we are actually talking about the Conservative Party, which has more, historically, more connection with the Republican Party in the US. Now, it looks like our call in for today may have failed to eventuate, and I will be tracking that down. And in the meantime, I'll just try to get into some other news for you. And we're just coming up to break shortly, but not quite yet. So I'm going to take a little look here at a story that was put up on InfoWars. And this is a story about the TSA opt-out week, which has been covered extensively by InfoWars. And, of course, people in the US are going out and filming the TSA at airports. But this particular story I found really, really inspiring, because it actually shows a policeman standing up for free speech, standing up for the US Constitution in a way which is practically unheard of in the US. It's just quite unusual. And the story here is Ashley, Jessica and Jason Burmis visit Albany International to educate people about opting out of dangerous body scanners and filming inclusive pat-downs. And actually, it's probably a little long for me to play you the whole clip, but it's definitely worth having a look, because the what actually happens is that they go into the airport and they're inside the airport and they're greeting people as they come off planes and handing them leaflets. And pretty soon, one of the airport officials finds out what's going on, and in a very, very contemptuous, condescending way, he walks up to them and orders them to kind of follow him, and says he wants to have a chat with them and find out what they're doing. And there are no police at this point, but the airport official seems incredibly cocky and confident that that he's going to basically do whatever he wants. They, of course, politely refuse to comply with his request, and he then summons the sheriff. And they brief the sheriff on what they're doing, and they explain to him that it is fully actually allowed by the TSA, not to mention the US Constitution, and they convince him, and he's fully on board with it. And then he goes back to the airport management official and tells him, look, I'm sorry, but these people have every right to be doing what they're doing here. And then this kind of argument ensues between the police and the airport official, which is really quite amusing. And we see the chagrin in the face and the frustration of this man, civilian, but who believes... See, these people believe that the police are essentially their attack dogs. They believe they can just tell the police, you know, go and sick that guy, sick onto that guy, and the police will just do whatever they want. And it must have been extremely, extremely disturbing, extremely shocking to see a policeman basically refuse to follow that order, and instead stand up for the rights of the accused, of the hapless bystanders who are being targeted in this case. So definitely worth a look at that video. And we will be heading to break shortly, so please stay with us. And if you'd like to get online and give us a call, you're most welcome, as I said before. 1300 153 372 if you're calling in Australia. We'll be right back after the break. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to be talking to you today. Welcome to all our listeners, and I'd like to just say we're having a little trouble getting Don Meisch on. It seems to have been a bit of a glitch, but I do have a caller on the line. I have Preston from Texas. Preston, welcome to the show.
Here.
Hello. Yes, sorry, we're having a bit of trouble hearing you there. Could you say that again?
Okay.
Guys, it's nice to be here. Sorry, this phone doesn't pick up that well. Can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Please continue.
Oh, I'm just glad you are having this subject on tonight. I've been looking into it a lot lately. So I noticed a rash, looked like an RFID implant, and Jason thought that it had gotten infected. And I was just looking at all the different possibilities that they're used for, besides, you know, for human implantation. Now for tinnitus treatment, or just physiology, besides just our, you know, identification, they have biometrics like EKG, EEG, and EMG readings.
Okay, can I just clarify? You're talking about RFID chips there, are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, the subject of today's show, although we may not end up talking about that because the guest hasn't arrived, the subject of today's show was actually electricity smart meters, which are not RFID chips. These are devices that are fixed to your electricity meter that allow the electricity company to more closely monitor and sometimes throttle your electricity power usage.
I did look at that. A friend of mine was asking me if I was into that, and I said I really hadn't heard of it. But, yeah, they said the RF density in some places where there's like 100,000 meters within a small area, and that some of them transmit every 30 seconds, your data, they think, and it's not encrypted. So they think people can use it to see when you're not home. And
that is incredible, isn't it? I mean, that's because these devices are constantly beaming out a signal. So they're, as someone described it, they're like, you know, masthead transmitters in every home. So the amount of radiation has just dramatically increased in suburban neighborhoods.
Well, they said they want to do embedded that technology in everything, you know, the little RF. And most of it, I guess, is pretty low power.
I see. So what you're saying is that the RF transmission is also used by RFID chips. So, yeah, of course, it's a much weaker type of signal, and you have to be within probably a few feet to pick up the signal, whereas the electricity smart meters, well, I'm not quite sure what their range is, but I believe that they actually communicate with each other from household to household. What's your take on that?
Yeah, well, they won't tell you the upper range of some of the high-end sensors. They're actually like transponders. The high-end, you know, having someone can work on long range, you know, camera. Actually, you know,
Okay. Across
the galaxy.
I'm having a lot of trouble hearing you there, Preston. I think you might be on a very bad line. I think we might have to. You're welcome to call back, but I think we might have to let go of this call because we're not picking you up very well. Sorry about that.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it looks like we do have a problem there getting our expert on today. So I'm actually going to continue with some other stories from Truth News. let's pick up on this story here from the United Nations report that says that the world's permafrost is beginning to thaw. And I've got a little clip here from the ABC, which will play for you, and you can make up your mind as to whether you think this looks like a serious issue that you should be very concerned about.
A new report is warning that methane leaking from the Arctic permafrost is far greater than previously thought. Scientists say it stores twice the amount of carbon currently held in the atmosphere. As Environment reporter Sarah Clark explains, if that's released, it has dire implications for the planet.
It covers a quarter of the northern hemisphere, but scientists now believe the permafrost, or the ground cover of ice, is warming faster than they thought.
Observations indicate that permafrost has already begun to thaw. Active layer thickness, indicated by the arrow up there, is increasing at many sites and the temperature of the permafrost has begun to rise.
Addressing the United Nations climate talks, these scientists are spelling out the implications. If the thaw of the deep layer of frozen soil accelerates, it could release huge amounts of carbon dioxide and methane that have been held in the subsoil for thousands of years.
Thawing permafrost in turn can impact global climate, and the reason is there's 1,700 gigatons of carbon in permafrost in the form of frozen organic matter. That's roughly twice the amount of carbon that's currently in the atmosphere today.
These regions across Alaska are already feeling the heat. As the ice cover melts, homes are at risk, as well as rail lines and infrastructure.
On the lower right is the village of Shishmaref, where increased wave action and warming permafrost eroded the permafrost away, and the village literally fell into the ocean.
As the UN debates ways to limit a global temperature increase of 2 degrees Celsius, it's keen to remind nations that until now, the hazards of warming permafrost haven't been factored into the equation.
Neither the scientific community, nor UNEP in its GAP report, nor the IPCC have fully accounted for the potential positive feedback of enhanced greenhouse gases from permafrost melting. So this will be a challenge.
It's a challenge, with scientists warning that emissions from permafrost could eventually account for up to 40% of the planet's total greenhouse gases. Sarah Clark, ABC News.
Well, there we have it. The permafrost is melting. Now, I don't have any specific research that would counter those claims to bring to you today, but what I've found with the history of climate alarmism and climate change alarmism is that every few months we see a dramatic statement like this coming from some source, some purported expert source. And then on the heels of that, we usually find that there is some complete debunking of that that follows. But the debunking is usually done on alternative sites or smaller sites and never reaches the mainstream news. And the general public is left with a series of shocking news stories that they can't really deny because they have no source of information to go to where they can actually, you know, triangulate that and actually, you know, evaluate it, because they only ever get, because they basically rely on the mainstream news sources, they really have nothing else to compare it to. What I do know is that the ice in Antarctica, much against what they've said in the news, is actually not decreasing. The Antarctic sea ice has been steadily increasing, and the thickness of Antarctic ice has been steadily increasing. And yet, despite that, we have had stories just like this repeatedly telling us that the Antarctic ice is dangerously thin. It's completely ludicrous. It is completely in denial of the facts. So I do hope to find more original research on this subject of the permafrost melting. And actually, after the break, I would like to turn to some of our climate skeptic news here in Australia. I'm going to read to you from a fantastic blog here by Joanne Nova, who is one of Australia's prominent climate skeptics. So that'll be right after the break. Do stay with us, Truth News Radio Australia. My name's Herriwood Fenton, and we broadcast here every week. So we'll be right back after these short messages. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to have you aboard. Well, ladies and gentlemen, our guest has come on the line, and I now have Don Meisch, who has been directly involved in standard setting specific to possible health effects from exposure to electromagnetic radiation on the line. Don Meisch has served on the Standards Australia Committee for Telecommunications EMR Exposure Standards and was a consultative committee member for a revised Australian Government Powerline Exposure Standard. In 2010, he received a PhD from the University of Wollongong for his thesis on conflict of interest and bias in telecommunications standard setting. And he has been a member of the Australasian College of Nutritional and Environmental Medicine since 1999 and has published a number of papers in the ACNEM Journal on various health effects of EMR exposure. And he is currently involved in researching possible health effects from wireless smart meters. Don Meisch, welcome to Truth News Radio.
Yes, well, hello.
Hi, it's great to have you on. We had a bit of a problem there getting you on earlier, and I wasn't able to speak to you before the show. But look, I thank you so much for coming on today. I did a brief interview about 2 weeks ago on the subject with a lady from Melbourne, and we went through a number of the issues for both in relation to privacy and personal freedoms and health effects. I believe your main area of focus is health effects. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. And that's what I've been doing, actually. Over the last week, I've been going around talking to various groups. I spoke at a medical conference and speaking to people who have actually been affected by smart meters. And it's quite a sad story.
Yeah. Look, that if you can just maybe give us your breakdown on that whole area and what you know. I guess if you keep private or confidential any information that needs to be confidential, but I would certainly love to know what the risks are and any case histories you've got.
Well, if you had asked me this question a year ago, I would have said I can't see a problem.
Yeah,
because when this first started surfacing for me about a year ago, started reading in newspapers that people were being affected by smart meters, I started to look into it, and the data I got was that because the smart meter transmits the data wirelessly from the home back to the utility.
Sure.
The information I got is this only happens between four and six times a day, less than a second. So I could not see, how can people be driven out of their homes, not being able to sleep in homes with that sort of transmission? Not possible.
Mm.
So I actually, I didn't think it was an issue. Then we started getting more complaints and started looking into it. And what was interesting when we started taking some measurements, and we found out that rather than just between four and six times a day, actually, to clarify, the data transmission, this is energy use being transmitted wirelessly from a smart meter back to the utility, it does take place only four to six times a day. My understanding is actually six, but four to six.
Yeah.
But there's other transmissions too for network purposes. And if you look at the literature, you actually find out that the average transmission time with all the transmissions can be anywhere between 9,600 to 190,000 times a day. Now, these are very brief transient transmissions. And then you start looking into the issue, well, how could these brief transmissions? Now, the transmissions are well below the standards, so we're not, in breach of standards. But it looks like what it is these very brief transmissions happening, bang, 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 like that. Very high transient, very brief spikes of RF energy is affecting people's sleep patterns. And then when you actually take the measurements of the levels of these and you compare those to studies, the one study which I've been looking at is a transmitter study in Switzerland, you start seeing that the levels that people are being exposed to are in excess of the levels where we're seeing sleep disruption and tinnitus and other issues like that. So when you look at the actual exposure levels and the literature, you're seeing there is connection. Now, and you look at the literature, especially the Russian literature, and you start seeing the symptoms that are being reported from research.
Yeah.
You find people in Melbourne reporting the same symptoms. And a lot of times you find that they weren't aware that there was a smart meter. You know, they haven't read about it in the paper and got worried.
Yeah.
The other day at a medical conference, a doctor came up to me afterwards and said that he was quite surprised because for the last 6 weeks he'd been having problems, really having trouble getting to sleep, maintaining sleep, waking in the morning early, just really fatigued. And he said he'd only made that connection after my talk, that it all started when a smart meter was installed on his bedroom wall.
Interesting.
And so what we're seeing over here is there's a special problem when these meters are installed. They install them virtually where the old meters are. And I know in Melbourne, I think this is the most major towns and cities, a lot of times the meter box is on a bedroom wall.
Right.
And when that happens with a smart meter, people are being exposed to RF at a very pulsing frequency that it looks like this is the major health issue.
But now you've said that the actual level is well below accepted standards, like for health. So how is it possible then that these pulses could be affecting people if it is below the threshold that's been tested to be safe?
Okay, well, the standards, when you look at the standards, they're only addressing immediate health effects at really high levels of exposure, basically a thermal effect, which means when human tissue or anything biological is exposed to a really high level of radio frequency or microwave,
yeah,
you know, the tissue heats up, like, you know, what happens in a microwave oven. So the standards only address immediate health effects at acute levels of exposure. They don't address prolonged exposure over low levels. So in other words, we, in the standards committee, some of us called it a cooking standard. So basically standards are irrelevant. What people are concerned about is that this prolonged exposure, you know, if it's on your house 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, what's the prolonged effect on health? So we don't have standards for that.
And that's a real worry, isn't it? Because there's a lot of other devices using wireless. How does this compare with your internet Wi-Fi? Is it using similar frequencies and similar levels?
Okay, similar frequencies. I've looked at that. Also, the other thing to consider is the digitally enhanced cordless telecommunications.
Of course, yeah.
The cordless phones most people have, that they also put a pulsing microwave signal the whole time they're plugged into the wall.
Yeah.
Some don't, but most of them over here actually do. The levels, you know, when you compare average Wi-Fi levels, let's say at a similar distance Wi-Fi, and you got the deck cordless phone,
yeah,
and you got a smart meter, the smart meter signal is far more powerful than either of the other two.
Oh, okay, so it's much more powerful than that. That's interesting. Because,
yeah.
I mean, typically, like, I was living in an apartment for a while where my Wi-Fi router was way down the hall, and I was still getting pretty, you know, 100% signal in my bedroom. So I thought my internet Wi-Fi was putting out a pretty powerful signal. But you're saying, well, that's way lower than what a smart meter is sending out. Now, is that because the smart meters are actually communicating? I've got a question here. Are the smart meters actually communicating with each other from household to household?
Well, there's two types over here. There's the sort of a mesh network. There you get smart meters communicating with each other, communicating with like a relay station that collects data, and then that sends it back. One place we saw the other day, the house is being renovated, so there's no power on. And we found that particular mesh network smart meter was constantly sending out this really pulsing signal. And we thought, well, look, there's no one home. There's no power being used. It was far more powerful than the other smart meters on the street.
Wow.
That was the hub. So that was collecting this is what we're thinking. That was collecting data from the other smart meters and transmitting it, you know, onwards.
I see.
Bedroom wall.
Yeah, yeah. That doesn't sound good.
Whoever's sleeping in that bedroom is going to be having sleep problems. See, they're not looking at location of these smart meters, where the antennas are. And, of course, the other system we got is the mesh network, which is even more powerful. It doesn't transmit as often as the mesh network, but the signals are powerful, very more powerful than the other one. And we had a case just yesterday, a lady was, she noticed that when she started working by her kitchen sink, doing cooking and everything, she was getting this piercing headache. And found out that, well, the thing was that they had just installed the WiMAX, this is the WiMAX system, on her, you know, replaced her listening meter with the WiMAX meter.
We're just about to go to break, Don. We'll be right back. You'll be with us for one more segment till the end of the hour. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Please stay with us, and we'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to be with you today. Well, my guest today is Don Meisch, who's an expert in areas related to electromagnetic radiation and their health effects. And we've been talking about the smart meters, which are currently being rolled out in Victoria and possibly soon to be rolled out across Australia. I know that New South Wales is certainly being targeted. And it's a massive operation, putting these high-tech gadgets onto our meters, which can feed information back to the electricity headquarters using wireless transmission technology, and allegedly can be used to help us manage our electricity better so that we don't have to pay so much, so that we can use our hairdryer at a more appropriate time, for example, when the cost is lower. Now, I have a lot of criticisms and a lot of anger about the concept of people being forced to use electricity when it's cheaper at the behest of these systems, because I know people don't typically have a choice. People live lives based on what we all have to do to survive. And you can't just delay what you're doing, for example, cooking dinner for the kids. You can't just sort of do that at 10 p.m. I mean, there's just a whole lot of examples there, and we talked about it in the last show, that I find it an intrusive and somewhat ridiculous imposition onto people, all driven by the fact that they've decided to increase prices. And they've talked a lot about how we need to deal with this baseload problem and the problem of dealing with the sharp peaks that occur when a lot of people need electricity. For example, when they turn their air conditioners on when it gets very hot. And air conditioners being one of the major drains on electricity. But, of course, people turn on their air conditioners when it gets hot. And the idea that you would not turn on your air conditioner when it's hot to save money and you turn it on later in the night when it's cool is just so palpably ridiculous, it just makes me really annoyed. Can I just get a quick take on that from you, Don Meisch?
Yes, well, I think, okay, what is the real purpose of smart meters? Why are they being introduced? From what I'm seeing, it's not so much, to save, energy to help the poor consumer, but ultimately to flog them new devices. Because when you look into it, there's a massive amount of, large appliance manufacturers behind all this, and we're already getting smart appliances. And, of course, the central hub of this is going to be your smart meter. Your smart meter is going to be commuting not just for the utility but power use. But when you have all your smart appliances, it's communicating with your toaster, with your fridge, with your washing machine, your air conditioner, that will allow the utility to turn off whatever it feels is suitable at the time. But the other thing is, when you start looking at these newer devices, I mean, you've got your smart fridge that, you know, your when your food would have little RFID tags with the expiry date. Every time you put food in your fridge, the fridge will record the used expiry date, what it is. So then you might be at work and you might be thinking, oh, what am I going to cook for dinner tonight? Send a message to the fridge. And the fridge will tell you what's in there, give you the expiry dates, and then it can actually give you, this is already exists, this, it'll actually give you a recipe depending on what's in the fridge for you. And then it will also maybe give special recipes for the members of your family because it's all, you know, little computers in there. They've got a robotic vacuum cleaner with a camera attached. So you can be sitting in your office and you can watch your vacuum cleaner going around, checking out the house, sort of like an automatic robotic security guard.
Yeah.
You got all these devices, but the problem is they're all communicating with the smart meter, with each other. The end result is our exposures to microwaves is going to be increased significantly. Then you start looking at the literature, you start saying, but wait a minute, there's a large body of literature here that says these levels can affect some people. How many people are going to be affected? We don't know. But, you know, from just the other day, just the smart meters are being introduced in Melbourne. We're getting a lot of people who've never before even considered health effects from, you know, electromagnetic fields, now having problems. So we're just starting, basically we're guinea pigs. What we're seeing, I think, is a huge social experiment, and we don't know the results yet. We're all sort of guinea pigs. Now, my concern is this is all based on bogus standards, like what I looked into. The standards are only addressing immediate health effects. Why? Because they're controlled by industry. When I was on the standards committee, we were fighting the introduction of the higher exposure levels because we said, look, there's all this evidence that shows that there are low-level effects. It is not justifiable from a public health viewpoint to increase these standards. What was the industry's viewpoint and the government? Now, the government at the time was the major shareholder in Telstra, which I would call a conflict of interest. The reason was that, but wait a minute, we've got all these new devices that are due to come online that have exposure levels over the Australian health-based standard.
Right.
So what do? We have to increase those levels to allow the introduction of new technology. So what I'm saying is that they're not health-based standards, they're economically-based standards, which allows the industry to bring in whatever it wants, and they can spout this lie that, oh, look, it's well below the standard. What are you complaining about? So basically, it's all about selling new gadgets to the public.
Just got a question, getting back to what we were talking about in the before the break there. You were talking about the mesh system, and I wasn't quite clear. Is that mesh system in use in Melbourne, to your knowledge?
They're both being rolled out. It's in use in Melbourne. I know that AusNet is using the mesh network. There's another one, the WiMAX network. Gemini is using the mesh network. AP AusNet is rolling out the WiMAX network.
Okay, so
they're... they're still being rolled out at the moment. The big question over here is the fact that they're saying you have no choice. It's mandated. Whether you want one or not, we're going to stick one on the side of your house. Legal advice is saying that's not true. They can come on your property to service existing equipment, not to replace it with something new.
Right.
So that's the situation at the moment over here. We're having both systems rolled out.
And of course, these are just brand names, essentially. WiMAX and Mesh, are they the brand names of the systems?
That's basically the way they operate.
Okay.
Like a mesh system works with big mesh. You know, you got all these smart meters communicating with each other, communicating with one area located, you know, smart meter, which is transmitting data further down.
I see.
Whereas the WiMAX works at a larger distance, more powerful. It's a different system.
I see.
Basically, it's still exposing people to high levels.
So what is the mechanism by which the data gets back to headquarters. I mean, if I can understand if it's using this mesh system, then it's going from household to household and then sort of relaying it. If it's not doing that, how does the data actually get back to the electricity headquarters?
Well, the say your house, let's say if it's a mesh network.
Yeah.
Okay, so that you're every 4 to 6 hours, your mesh network is collecting your energy usage, and that is sent out probably to a collector smart meter somewhere in the street in the area, and then that's transferred further on to a relay,
okay.
And eventually it gets back through the system,
right.
Back to the utility.
So there's a collector smart meter. Yeah.
Basically talking to each other.
Yeah. And that's true, right. Irrespective of which system. They all use that system, do they?
Yeah, with my understanding is with the Y-mesh network system, that's each meter is talking not so much to each other, but they're talking to a relay which is located in a power pole.
I see,
and that gets back to, usually with the Y-max network, they have to transmit further distance, like out in the country, so that there's not as there. So they need to be more powerful to connect with the relay system, which is somewhere in the area.
Of course,
it's a higher signal which goes out.
And I can understand why that means that the levels are much higher with the smart meters than they are with internet Wi-Fi, because they're communicating longer distances. That would be the main reason why now, obviously, this information was available when they first planned this, when they first rolled it out. The knowledge was there, but was ignored or disregarded. There's been a slow kind of groundswell of awareness of this, but it very rarely surfaces. I do have a number of articles which I've actually recently had a look at and put on our Twitter feed. I think the Sun Herald has done a number of articles covering this. And one of the things that came up in one of the articles I read was that people were complaining that the smart meters were causing other devices or other electrical faults in their homes, so that they were actually interfering with other electrical devices in the house. Are you aware of that at all?
Yes, definitely. Look, I saw one the other day. We visited this one fellow down the street, just checking out smart meters and talking to people. And he wasn't having any health problems, but he said that before the smart meter was installed, he could turn his toaster on and turn his kettle on. No problem. Turn the TV on.
Yeah.
Ever since the smart meter was installed, if he tries to turn like his toaster on and the kettle on, it blows the circuit breaker, which means something is happening there. More current is being drawn. Maybe there's a huge. It would tend to be the case that when something's turned on, there's a spike, in the electricity supply. Now this spike is actually causing effects on electrical equipment. And, so that's another thing which really hasn't been looked into. I think what we're looking at is the technology still being developed and quickly rolled out.
Yeah, and just hastily put in and warnings ignored. And, of course, people like yourself, people who are complaining about the sleep disturbances are going to be disregarded, and they're going to say, oh, they're just making it up. But, I mean, this business about the toasters and the radio, that's another independent verification that we have a problem here. Unfortunately, we're just at the end of the hour. Thanks so much for coming on, Don. I'd love to get you on again.
Look, that's very good. I'd love to join. Thank you very much for this.
No, it's been terrific.
We'll be in contact.
Yeah, definitely. Something we're going to continue covering here on Truth News. So that's us for the week. We'll be back next week. See you then. Over and out from Truth News Radio Australia.